and we're in the position, we certainly don't want to have to go through the process of retrenching a number of managers because of past discretion that are now being introduced as a new requirement and being applied to them. I don't think anybody wants to see that sort of happening. But to agree 100% that in terms of new management that is brought on board after the implementation in place, those folks would need to go through the vetting process. In the leadership context, I think what's also important to understand
shortens the period quite considerably for discipline within the department. And changes, part of also what kind of prolonged these processes was the long appeal processes. We've now reduced that to a paper appeal process. So overall, the system is improving. And we're also making sure that managers report regularly on suspensions and why these suspensions have not been lifted. But if you look at previous years, you will already see that with the introduction of the disciplinary code, the new changes, we are beginning to see shorter periods of suspension. But Ms. Shishuba and Ms. Maseki, you may want to come in at this point.
Thank you, Commissioner, Minister, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I think the Commissioner has covered the retention issue, but the only other addition I think was in the Sunday Times this week that we are competing with the international arena because our social workers, we need to be proud of that, but it seems that the training is very grounded and other countries would want them, psychologists and nurses. So social workers are following the trend as well. And I think another issue that needs to be remembered is that this field of corrections, it's not a field that easily attracts the professionals who happen to be women. Not all of them would be comfortable working with people who have a history of criminality. And with the issues that happen in Bavian Sport and so on, I think people are scared. But with psychologists in the country, clinical psychologists are less than 5,000. And we're competing for that number. We need to pat ourselves on the back that at least we have about 36 currently, which is a very small number. But when you think that the whole country depends on 5,000, because we cannot admit educational psychologists, they only deal with children. On the issue of indicators, I think when we came to the portfolio committee last time, we said that as a department, we did introspection. And I think the commissioner in his introduction did say that sometimes we get very enthusiastic about issues.
Also, I'll be touching on there as well, is the storage location. In our leadership type environment, you may find that because of the limited space capacity, leadership will often have separate storage locations for certain stock, especially if they already have examples of their stock on the plan on their floors currently. They may have additional surplus stock housed elsewhere. So once again, you're then to look at not only the primary unit premises, but also those additional locations, which could be done more effectively in terms of internal register. I think this also with regard to the transfer of ownership, you'll often find in both trades, whether it be by virtue of the fact that there's a highly successful smaller independent leadership out there that looks like a viable option. One of our big organizations may sweep in and we decide to take them over. Obviously we're concerned in terms of the delays with the transfer of certificates between the existing entity and the new entity. And possibly just by way of clarification, wasn't immediately clear from the legislation. If you'd like to see some form of window period while the application that is actually being processed, the business can continue to operate. The flip side to that is we could find ourselves in a situation where a dealership actually has to shut down for a period of time until that transfer process is completed and then can be reactivated again. And once again, just in terms of the staffing implications as well as the business implications for that could be quite substantive. So we'd like to see a facility that allows for a transitional period while that is actually being processed until the final decision is actually taken. With regards to the register of records, whether it's intended or not, I'm not entirely sure, but in our view, it doesn't make sense if you're maintaining an electronic record to have to print those out on a daily basis. I'm sure that the portfolio committee looking at environmental affairs, there wouldn't really be too favorably upon us for cutting down on their fees. We have the view that if those records are actually maintained electronically, and provided somebody came around, we could print those details off and make it available to the inspecting officer, that should be acceptable, and therefore that wording should perhaps be amended in the tribunal itself. The other point which has already been highlighted is with regards to the issue of people copying the IDs and so forth, and Gary alluded earlier to the fact that, for example, when people get rid of old tyres, second-hand tyres, we agree with the previous suggestion that was made in terms of looking at a particular threshold and perhaps a categorization of specific high-risk items for which additional identification documents and records need to be retained. The items that are falling beneath that threshold and not in a specific risk category, so it could be excluded. Moving on. One of the more substantive concerns that we have relates to the issue of storage and also the modification of goods. There is the holding period of 7 days once goods are obviously being received. And as Gary mentioned earlier on, the Road Traffic Act already makes provision for the dealer to get those records on board and register those goods into their name. So we will have records of the specific identification component of those vehicles, for example. The problem is it also created a lot of dealerships, especially the requirement to keep the goods separate. A lot of the dealerships are fairly small, and they don't have additional facilities to actually store those goods separately. I believe that the register and the records that are currently maintained would allow one to very easily identify the stock item on the floor and to be able to identify them aside from the rest of the goods that are actually available on the sales floor. So it would like that to be considered. The other item linked to this as well relates to the issue of the modification of the goods. Once again, just to highlight here, it creates a sort of unintended consequence in that the dealership will often need to do some work to that vehicle to prepare it for resale. In terms of the way the legislation is currently worded, they wouldn't be able to touch or modify that vehicle in any way for that initial 7-day period. We'd like to submit that the dealership be allowed to modify the vehicle provided that it does not amend or change the fundamental identification components of that, i.e. you can't go and have the car re-sprayed pink. You can't go and amend any primary identification criteria of that. And I believe we could go through a process in the regulations to identify what are those two criteria that cannot be amended. But things like, for example, having the vehicle serviced, maybe adding NAG rules onto it, you know, that kind of thing is not necessarily going to affect the ability to identify that stock item, and that's something that we would like to consider. It's also bearing in mind that in the use of context, the for any item that is just sitting on the floor, the dealership is paying quite a substantial amount of money since the interest charges for just having that there. And if you're going to extend the sales cycle by yet another 7 days and they can only start preparing the vehicle for resale 7 days later, it obviously adds quite a substantial overhead to the dealership. There's one other item that is completely worth considering, and that is with regard to the identification of certain components. Maybe a separate input for those involved in the consumer protection board is to look at the introduction of perhaps some additional identification criteria or facilities on users so that we have the ability to track items more uniquely based on serial numbers, but that's a separate discussion. Then just with regard to the inspection powers of the police, most of these are already regulated in terms of existing legislation, so we don't feel that there's a requirement or necessity to once again rehash these things already present in terms of existing criminal legislation. regards to the penalty, one of the fun parts here is when we look at the penalties is unfortunately something as simple as an oversight by one of the staff members potentially puts it into the same category as some of the more grievous offences. And I think it might be worthwhile to relook at the penalties that are associated with each of those sections and perhaps tie about certain specific items. The other thing that we do have a concern about is obviously this can be quite a complicated piece of legislation. And in our environment, if the police officials are not sufficiently trained, or their relevant or associated colleagues are not sufficiently trained on this, it can see certain dealerships, for example, being closed down because of a minor infringement. So we believe that we should follow the normal legal procedure with regard to searches and warrants, etc., etc., to prevent something like that from happening where you have an inexperienced individual coming in and through oversight or just through a limited training or whatever, wind up actually having a vision closed down and then taking away the procedure to get the reopened once again. The other thing that we would, which is obviously quite critical for us, in terms of the actual registration, we'd like to see the ability to actually be able to ring fence. So if there is an offence at a particular premises, to actually be able to ring fence the penalties and what have you to that specific environment, as opposed to it affecting the entire group registration if it's just an isolated event at one of the dealerships. Just to close up, as Gary mentioned previously, I think we have quite a extensive setup in terms of the existing legislation, existing structures that we have in place, existing records that we keep and checks that we actually implement within the industry. And on that basis, the principle of self-regulation based on membership to the association, I think, is obviously first class in our environment. In the event, obviously, that can't be accommodated, then we trust that the various requests that we've tabled here will be taken into further consideration. I think also just to obviously, from our point of view, not having started of regulations, just yet, the ASIN regulations are finally, in terms of having the understanding of both of those two components before the whole thing goes live, we would hate to be in a situation where the regulations become inhibitive to the effectiveness of the Act, obviously an ongoing involvement in that and our commitment to. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
We believe that public detection systems to International Commission in May, after consideration of the application from the applicant compliance requirement, ready for the applicant to do that. We would suggest that that should actually be a month, because if all the requirements are complied with, and we don't believe there should be any questions, because the requirements will determine whether the organization will be registrable or not. So we would submit that must be a May. If I then move on to the section 9, and section 9, in line with what my colleagues have submitted, we would submit that would then be amended or would change to the effect that you will not physically have to obtain an amended registration certificate, but you simply will internally amend your record, which will fall under one application for one group. So, for example, the Imperial Group or the McCarthy Group of 100 leaders countrywide, you will have one application as you have for the National Credit Act, for example, and we will, all our leaders will slot in under that, and we will notify the relevant police organization of any changes to dealership, etc. So that is how we would obviously would like to be amended. Then another important one is section 11.3, which deals with what Graham also alluded to. The National Commissioner must cancel the registration of the dealer if the dealer, and in some cases subsection B, thousands of flowers in the provisions of this act. Now that's very hard. If that's an authority group or museum group or any group in this country, the National Commissioner must cancel the registration of that dealer if one of our dealerships makes a mistake, it could be in that recognition. This act could have the effect of this stopping seizing business for a whole group. So we would like the must to be know, because it's been in the discretion of the National Commissioner in accordance with the Act, whether the offence is severe enough to actually slow the whole group down. We believe it's an unintended consequence of the Act. Also in terms of the relevant instance in 11.4, property consideration should be given to actually dealing in a minor administrative offence, giving the dealer the opportunity to actually remedy that particular offence. This could still be a offence on terms of the criminal law side, but from a criminal point of view, in terms of the act, in terms of canceling the registration, maybe it gives the person the opportunity to actually remedy an inadvertent omission. If we move then on to, the record of dealer section 22, grey matter relative, and the important clauses are 22, 6, 7, and 8. That's very important in terms of the electronic printout on a daily basis. Relative, that's impractical, so I just want to reinforce that. And in 24, we grant a little to the fact that we have to hold the food for 7 days and we cannot alter the form in any way whatsoever. That would be very problematic from a dealer's perspective. Then if we move on, Graham has spoken about the seizure aspect, and I also just want to, in terms of the penalties, obviously, forfeiture is a remedy that's available to the state, and it should be available to the state, but it should maybe be governed by the existing legislation as well. You've got the Assets Forfeiture Act, the police have got power in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. Delegation is also very important, because often it's delegated down to the police station level, and we are very concerned that it has in fact happened in the past, where a particular person in the police state sealed up a dealership for a whole week. And that has got massive ramifications from a business point of view. In terms of smaller dealers, it could actually close that business down if you can't close for a week. So that has got some severe ramifications. And then just on the transitional provisions, that section 43, our recommendation is that once the Act becomes the law, and if the committee has decided not to exclude the local industry from the ambit of this Act, that maybe to stop the rush, that maybe the existing second and this act specifically should be valid for a point of time, very much like our driver's licenses, within 6 months or a year to convert to the new one. And I just want to also reinforce what Graham said in terms of acquiring new businesses. I also would submit that from day one, once it's applied, to add that particular business to your group, and once it applies to the relevant authority, it should be valid until the commissioner has decided upon that issue. It's very much like the National Trade Regulator. If you apply that one, it's valid until the regulator has the opportunity to retain it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
That's the presentation from the Kenwood University. And many people to say that's the one thing that I would like to make here. And this is going to affect the image. That's what we are having. We are not going to assume of this. We are going to be allowed. Of how we need another thing, but it's clear and all everything that is in there. I recognize the two rules, Mehola Bani, Mehan Lee, and the Timon.
Thank you.
Graham has argued against regulation and in favor of, as it could be, self-regulation. I'm sure that you have looked at that and seen the second hand dealer in the has left. It's a lot of corruption. The Akhas are not so good. And you so. And I'm a victim of that. Now, if you do not want to have more regulation, how do you propose this corruption has to be dealt with? And secondly, if you talk about self-regulation, do you have an example that you can give of how your industry managed to deal with corrupt elements within the industry? Because I'm sure there are many. How are we going to deal with those problems that is available? And secondly, I think that Peter spoke about modification. Now, he suggests that certain changes should be allowed. I'm interested in knowing that kind of change. Should those changes be changing the model of life for one car and putting them in another car? Because that's the application of the country. So, what changes should be allowed? And, thirdly, under the inception powers of the provinces, so there should be limited, these should be limited to standard search. Well, what search is that being standard on standard? I just need clarity on that one. When the police are asked a stolen car that might be suspected to be at a certain dealership, should they be allowed just to be able to search what they say is being hidden in the property or whatever should happen?
Thank you. I think what you've done is actually sneak it yourself in a suggestion that you've made. The suggestion within this is that each leadership has its own specific registration, which would immediately mean that if there was a problem in that particular leadership, that particular one would be shut down, not the entire entity. Your suggestion that only one certificate would then be covered, but then you complain that actually that would then mean we would shut down the whole industry. So by suggesting that you don't provide certificates to each leadership, you're actually turning it into a similar industry in terms of the way this is laid out. You can't have it both ways. So that needs to be either. Because I don't for a moment think that that anyone here is wanting to put undue stress upon any business or have it put into a position where a particular act is going to lead to retrench. It's going to be utterly ludicrous. That's why we have these hearings. It's a pretty explicit point to that, which we will then deal with. But I think that from our side, you've raised a number of interesting points, but a few difficulties that we have to go through and deal with as a committee. But you have to understand that your industry, you may be speaking team here, sitting around the table, but there are elements within your industry which are not. And they have to be regulated. You may do a fine job of regulating yourself, but you can't expect, as the chair quite rightly said, you can't expect yourself to get through the different people on the elements within your industry. I am very concerned about the seven-day way to do it. I think that would have a huge impact on industries across the board, not only most people. So I think that's something that we need to discuss, even if we why we put in a difficult implication for us. Thank you.
The practice of IT is that people get killed. That's the bottom line of it. And we've got a responsibility to that as well. And I agree. While you might believe that you're doing a good job of regulating yourself, our experience of it might be a bit different. And I think the fact of the matter is also what you guys are completely ignoring is the application of application for exclusion. I mean, if you are doing such a good job, and you can, the association can be accredited by the commissioner, then self-regulation is an option. And with the understanding that it can never be less than what the act is like. I think that's an argument that's completely in the ball, is the exception. The second thing that worries me, you know, actually we appreciate your industry, because if it wasn't for your industry and lawyers, it would be. there was dark in the world. So we actually appreciate it. I think the problem is too many of us have experienced problems in this regard. And aren't lawyers brand new lawyers got stopped in court on my way back to Victoria by a traffic officer. And from a legitimate dealership. And that car has on false registration papers put on there by the dealer. And one of the big dealers, not a small dealer, one of the big dealers. So the matter of the fact is there are problems. The matter of the fact is that you guys are not doing such a good job as the people are doing. I think that is the problem. I think also, you know, you went about with using Addison's representation to say, do you agree with what they do? We specifically ask you, are you talking about the guy buying from you, or are you talking about the guy selling to you? And they said, we're talking about the guy buying from us. And then you said, do you agree with them? Shouldn't be necessary, you know, certainly limits, etc. As far as we are concerned, if somebody sells to you a second-hand product, that information needs to be there. We can still talk about the guy buying a 100-gram filter. That's because we'll speak about it. And I'm sure you can't expect that now, because with another presentation, we clearly distinguish between the two to that. Also, I think in part of my problem is that the presentation is not addressing the areas where we know there are problems. It's still living here. If you've got problems with reputable dealers, what about the smaller dealers? The guy that's got a small shop, and he just goes down to a truck about and takes up, and you go and look at what you find down to a truck about. You guys are not addressing that problem. You're not in the program. There's definitely problems in the industry. There won't be this amount of hijacking, of stealing of cars, if there were not people that are actually buying it. And we know it's not only people across the borders that buy them, it's people inside the country that buy them, it's dealers that buy them, it's shops that sell the second-hand part of it. So I must be honest, I think there are ways in the world that are making positions for you guys in terms of applying for exemptions.
For me, they are not concerned about security. They have proposed that quickly change the business to regulate to work on the motor industry. And given the cover of the number five, the point raised by the government about the change. Because, for instance, the example that you made about the shipping demand. It came to appear as because I was involved in a similar case here in Woodstock, where an owner of the car said, no, my car belongs to the car. Because he said, yes, it looks like my car, but it is not that big. So those are the things that, for me, are not something to, but here, I'm talking about other figures, but I'm saying this is the second hand with you, not only for mental industry organization. Thank you.
You say that here that the good thing to be successful and you say but you also say you need the sufficient test for the decision for the test. I can't understand whether you want this to be delayed or you want this to be heated up. And if you want to speed up any changes that you need to know on the condition of that, it will mean that if a car is a good test, and the utility which we need to find. It might have been stolen from where this process is called. And then they told me that it would have an indication of the political investigation. So I think that the delay in preparing for everything is appropriate with this deal, also not the investigation. I don't know how it's going to be. That's what it's like when you say that circle affected, and then you say that also means that the system is not the same. Thank you.
Thanks,
sir.
Just to check, you said the X will increase administrative work. I just want to check how you also said to see to locate the report to see. And also on police officers, you said if police officers are not sufficient to change. So I was just going to check, you see, how are we expecting them to be more successful than doing inspections? Because we had some similar work that maybe we can relate on, like the firearms unit. Those officials who are inspecting on those ones, who does or do or did go on the system of training and they are doing the work very well. That's what you should say, man. What are you saying to my son?
Yeah, I think I'll send this over to you to respond. I'm sure that your industry is one of the cause of our engagement, specifically with the number of industry. I think each and every one of us can tell things because we are the ones who are driving this conference. So we can tell things that happen to individual of us, mine not even worse. Because my car was written off. Somebody after 2 years went to a garage, I won't say his company, bought a car, changed the number and everything. It was my car. What that car taken from the garage with my numbers, my everything, but mine was just a 3 years written off. And I was also being reimbursed by the insurance, but my car was still in the house. So I'm saying that we have a benefit from it, there's no way to explain this in that. But by so saying, I'm just being over to the report to the witness that has been communicated on the next part of the document.
Thank you, Mr. Minister. I keep it as well, I've got my little shopping list with me. So, and please don't think that we're taking any of your concerns lightly. I'm able to respond. I think every single one of us, if we have a person being touched by theft of vehicles, hijacking, etc., we certainly know people who have. I think it's one of the difficulties we have is to take an entire industry because of certain specific events. I understand that it's because of experiences of fresh, their personal, but at the same time, I think just to highlight some of the steps that we as an industry take. When we bring new cars on board and the vehicle is traded into us, we have to rely on a number of things. Our dealership network, what we do is we conduct what they call HDI checks, which is actually checking against the lease database of stolen vehicles. So we do an initial assessment on that basis. We have to rely on those type of records. We have to rely on the way it's set up. He doesn't just go by the way the set up bank stops stolen or has used access. He still subsequently go and do additional checks by people, what they call the HDI check, to make sure that the vehicle is not actually stolen. If there's a possibility that there are dealers out there that don't do those checks and simply take the goods on board, it is possible. We're not going to pretend for a moment that reality may not exist. It does, but for the best part, in terms of the code of conduct for our particular group of representation, is one of the requirements that we actually impose on them to go through that process to ensure that we don't facilitate the sale, that is the release of stolen goods. I think it's the end to that. Perhaps to jump across one of the other questions that was raised, I think we're all aware that there are issues with regard to registration. We've come across numerous instances, and this would be my friend group, to give a practical example, where I was one of those who was receiving scheme funds for in some direct for a vehicle that was sitting here in Cape Town with me at the time, and had absolutely no connection whatsoever to the description of the other vehicle involved. So I think we also need to acknowledge that from a licensing and a registration point of view, sometimes things aren't picked up because the reference to the actual vehicle itself is incorrect in terms of databases as well. So just to bear things like that in mind. With regard to the question that was raised with regard to the type of changes to the vehicle, I think from a police perspective as well, we need to look at what are the key identifiers that we have for that vehicle, and we have VIN numbers and chassis numbers. And I think the onus is there that if there is a suspicion that a vehicle has been stolen, or going through the process of trying to identify a stolen vehicle, those are the key components that one would actually go looking for. So although somebody may have put a set of mags onto it, and that may have changed the appearance slightly, it doesn't change the underlying identification of that vehicle. So I think we need to acknowledge that just the chassis and VIN numbers are probably the most reliable mechanism for identifying and is what is commonly accepted as the identification mechanism to identify the stolen vehicle. I'm going to be here to respond particularly with regard to the current process, with regard to searches and warrants that are currently conducted under existing legislation. With regard to the issue of the group registration, it is definitely the issue of an administrative overhead to maintain, as Peter mentioned, that you can have a group with 120 premises, and you have to then maintain 120 certificates of registration and everything else, which is something that we're looking to avoid. The point that you made with regard to kind of shooting ourselves in the foot, because by having a single registration, one of these cancels or impact the entire registration, that is something specifically that we'd like to address, that in the event of a breach, the entire registration doesn't come forward in this space. Attention is given to the actual premises and the management to hold those parties responsible for their actions at that particular location, and not move to immediately dismiss or cancel the registration of the entire group, but perhaps have that particular premises removed or deregistered and closed down as a result until the dispute can be removed. The other issue that was raised with regard to the record keeping, certainly in our environment, the issue is with regard to the person selling the goods to the dealer, which is the person buying the goods from the dealer, and the support that we were mentioning for the previous suggestion was obviously keeping the records of the person who sold those goods to us. So the example that we used earlier was where, for example, somebody gets rid of tires, old tires, secondhand tires, and we obviously take their details there. But in terms of on selling that to another party, keeping those to the records may be in the state of business side. I don't know that it's going to serve that much of a purpose, but certainly in terms of who we get those goods from. So the simple reality, what we're trying to curb here is to stop the resale of stolen goods. That's the underlying principle involved in a lot of this. So by having the identification needs on top of the person providing us with the good, gives us the potential recourse as a need. The query that was raised with regard to the that 7 days delay for certain modifications. From the dealership perspective, that could be something as simple as getting a car ready for road wearing services. So it doesn't necessarily have to be changing the headlights on a mag or something like that. It could be something as simple as just preparing the vehicle and making sure the exhaust is fine or while the blades are being sorted out and things like that. So I think one would be very not to use too extreme an idea, but as I said to you earlier on with regard to the identification of those goods, as long as we can still track down by the minimum chassis number, that we will still be able to determine whether those goods are stolen or not, even if certain changes have been introduced. The question with regard to the training of these lead officials, certainly the experience from a company point of view, we tend to go on a big drive and get everybody trained up, and yes, we make every effort to make sure that regardless of what education itself, we constantly keep new staff up to speed and make sure that what we're trained, but sometimes there are windows that exist where people, maybe the person starts with a job in the area, but somebody who's been training is maybe in 2 weeks' time, and there's the possibility that during that initial 2 weeks, they may work on their understanding as opposed to training that they've actually received or did that, and that's where, so perhaps it's a case of only the folks that have received the formal training and that can be involved in these sort of search and seizure type situations. I think that would give us a far better sense of comfort. Do you want to have with regards to the search and the warrant process?
So we would, the Criminal Procedure Act has provision for search and seizure by the police and the authorities. So all we're asking is that there's no justification and some certainty of capability to have significant seizure in mind.
Madam Chair, just on the final note, we are well aware that our industry has problems within our own organisation. It's up to you all to try and sort out those problems. There are a number of, as we said around the table, a lot of smaller leaders that do not belong to our organisation, and we do know that these things happen. We also know that from time to time there are things that we do within some of the bigger organisations that we do set up. We do have a code of conduct that we follow through. We have fined various members that in the past for transgression. We have also dealt with consumer complaints. We have a consumer complaint mechanism in our organization, and we handle in excess of 2,000 consumer complaints every year in terms of resolving stuff. And quite often those consumer complaints are misinterpretations and lack of communication that we deal with. So we're not saying that our industry is taking maybe I wasn't clear enough up front. I did say that it was a request from our industry to come to the community to ask that we be excluded. However, we have been working with that and with business against crime. This far back to the legislation was recommended to be changed, and we indicated that if this wasn't a possibility, we would work closely with them to ensure that we could clean up the industry because we also are concerned about the crime in the country.
One of the questions that I'd also wanted to ask you was put by my colleague at the end of this table. In looking here in chapter 5, in section 25, what additional administrative burden is the taxpaying place on you? I'm looking through here and I can't imagine that there's a single thing here that you don't keep as a matter of record and as a court. So I'm very keen to know what additional burden is being placed upon you. Thank you.
That in answer to that, the only what we said up front was the manner and presentation in terms of the information. If, as we said, it can be consolidated and the format can be similar to what's in the other act, then it will make it a lot more sense. That's the only additional version that we're looking at. We just one sort of one standard uniform presentation across all the acts, which makes it a lot more expedient to train people, and therefore there's no confusion at the end of the day if people are having to produce three, four different formats of the same information for different law enforcement people.
Yes, so thank you very much. Thank you very much
Oh, I am an agent, James, about this Abandonna.
The South will also provide a significant input to downstream industries, which use scrap to produce intermediate products of greater monetary value. According to the Non-Ferrous Metal Industries Association of South Africa, the secondary industry plays a vital role in support of further downstream value-added activities. Some of the key contributions of the secondary industry are: 1. Provide competitively priced raw material inputs to downstream manufacturers to lower the prices of primary metals. Stimulates local fixed domestic investments in the manufacturing sector, which further contributes to job creation and export opportunities. 3. Supports and complements the metal recycling industry. And 4. Contributes to energy saving as recovered metal uses much less energy than the production of primary metals. Scrap metal, which whether it's in the form of a ferrous or a non-ferrous, can be categorized as either home scrap or purchased scrap. Home scrap is generated at the mill, refinery, or foundry, and is generally remelted and used again at the same plant. Home scrap never leaves the plant and therefore is not accessible to scrap merchants. The other category, purchased scrap, is further classified as either industrial, also called new scrap, or obsolete scrap. An example of industrial scrap is a piece of metal that is either cut or drilled. A metal that is cut or drilled out and is not incorporated into or made into the finished product is known as industrial scrap. The largest source of industrial scrap is the automotive industry. Obsolete scrap, also referred to as old scrap, is scrap that is worn out or unwanted in its form. Examples of obsolete scrap are automobile hulls, old farm equipment, and major home appliances. The metal recyclers, such as the majority of the members of the MRA, deal essentially with purchased scrap categories of scrap metal, and in particular obsolete scrap, as I've explained. The volumes of scrap metal generated and recycled in this country are substantial. Ferrous scrap generated local amounts of approximately 2.5 million tons annually. The market has seen rapid growth in volumes over the past few years. The volumes of non-ferrous scrap metal are considerably lower, but the monetary value per net is substantially higher than that of ferrous metal. It is estimated the gross revenue generated by ferrous scrap metal annually used in South Africa is on the order of 3.5 billion rand, while that for non-ferrous scrap metal is approximately 7 billion rand. Accordingly, the total gross revenue of both ferrous and non-ferrous scrap metal is approximately 10 billion rand per annum. It is important to note the participation of various types of operators within the scrap metal industry. The broad categories are as follows. The so-called peddlers, an individual who purchases scrap metal and resells it to bucket shops and scrap merchants. Peddlers' operations are typically one-person outfits, which collect small volumes of scrap metal, which they may find lying abandoned in the cells or in the streets, or collect costly items from businesses or households. The second category is the so-called bucket shop, typically have between 2 and 4 employees and buy scrap from the one-man scrap peddler. We estimate that there are approximately 3,000 bucket shops in South Africa. The next category is the scrap merchant, which includes both small and large businesses. Small scrap merchants perform basic processing and sorting and then sell the sorted scrap to the larger scrap metal recycler. There are approximately 1,000 registered scrap metal merchants. And then finally, there is the scrap metal recycler, which is a large business which handles large volumes of scrap. They recycle scrap metal for beneficiation by downstream industries. Recycled scrap metal is supplied to local foundries and steel mills, as well as to overseas customers. And I use the word recycle, and I'm specifically referring to the wording that's in the section, chapter 1 of definitions under recycle. Generally, your metal recyclers don't don't generally melt or dump. But all the other operations within that definition are applicable to the metal recycling. Our position is that the metal recycling association is in support of the bill, subject to the following amendments and inclusion. Number one, the bill discusses the term recycling and metal recycling. There is a definition for recycling in Chapter 1, but the metal to define a metal recycler. We submit that the definition for a metal recycler should be a person that carries out in his normal course of business the recycling of scrap metal as defined in the bill under the definition of recycling. Point 2. The bill has been designed to incorporate a multitude of different industries involved in handling different types of secondhand goods, and is therefore not industry specific. The MRA considers it imperative that regulations specific to the recycling industry be incorporated and read in conjunction with the bill to ensure the maximum effectiveness and efficiency in the execution of the proposed bill. The proposed regulations are not to undermine the efficiency of the bill, but rather to enhance the intent of the bill specific to the recycling industry. Finally, the MRA has had numerous consultations with directors upon the role of the legal services of the South African Police Service with the assistance of business against crime. To draft regulations would undermine the intent of the bill, but would also maintain the effectiveness of the recycling industry in allowing extensions for metal recycling. We believe that the draft regulations, which I'll expand on a little further, have been favorably considered by the Commission. The proposed regulations that we are asking for is primarily the exemption of the metal recycler from Section 42.1F of the Secondhand Goods Bill. As I explained to you, with the vast tonnages and volumes that the recycler has to process for supplying to a consumer, whether it's a mold or a foundry, there are key issues that are raised that could affect the recycler, particularly from a financial point of view. Bearing in mind that these materials are commodities, and commodity prices are affected by the market as well as by exchange rates. Now, for a recycler who is holding tens of thousands of tons of ferrous scrap, steel scrap, or thousands of tons of a particular copper, they're exposed quite considerably if they have to hold this material for 7 days. We therefore considered regulations to exempt the metal recycler. However, we feel that the regulations are strict to the specific recycler, and I'll emphasize what I mean by this. We suggest that the recycler is a fully paid up member of an accredited association of recyclers and or scrap metal dealers, is a registered dealer in terms of Section 3 of the Act. So we're not asking them to be exempt from Section 3. They must still be a registered dealer. Complies to the extent that these statutes are applicable to the applicant with the requirements of the Employment Equity Act of 1998 and the Skills Development Levy Act of 1999. They must also be registered with the South African Revenue Services for payment of income tax. It registered as a vendor in terms of value added tax of the Value Added Tax Act of 1991, has not, and the applicant is not a natural person, that is directors, members, trustees or partners, as the case may be, have not been convicted of an offence related directly or indirectly to or arising from the business of dealing in non-ferrous and ferrous metals specified in the third schedule of the Act in the 3 years immediately prior to the application for exemption. And finally, has paid a minimum of R1,400,000 as amended from time to time by the Minister as output tax in respect of plant, equipment and stock in the year of assessment immediately preceding the application for exemption. The reason why we put this clause in is it defines the size of the recycling. But we haven't limited it just to the purchase of scrap. Because we don't want to limit the drug profit industry as well. So if a person is buying plant and equipment to expand his business and get larger, we should not limit that. And that's why we've made this architect an encompassing consideration, maybe to respect the plant and equipment as well as the stock. In terms of section 18 of the draft rule, the intention of these regulations is to specify the criteria for accreditation of dealers' associations relating to the recycling and or scrap metal sector specifically. Our proposed regulations I'd like to expand on in accrediting the recycling or scrap metal dealers. 1. An application for accreditation for a recycling and or scrap metal dealers' association must be made in writing to the National Commissioner and must be accompanied by the information and documentation provided for, and I'll explain it to you now. The documentation that is required is 1. It must be a juristic person, has a constitution or other founding document which includes criteria for membership, including criteria designed to assess the trustworthiness and integrity of applicants for membership. It has a binding rule of conduct which includes a disciplinary code, including provisions entitling the association to take disciplinary action against members who or which fail to adhere to the admission requirements regarding trustworthiness and integrity. Represents a minimum of 25 fully paid up members. It keeps updated records of its members, including in respect of every member, the full name, registration number where applicable, physical and postal address, telephone and fax contact details. The association must have a bank account. It must prepare annual financial statements and has appointed an auditor to audit such statements. And should have the capacity to perform the functions set up in section 17 of the Act. Must also have the capacity to advance the purposes of the Act where applicable. The following information and document must, to the extent applicable, be submitted with and in support of the application for accreditation, proof of registration, and identity person, including the registration number, a certified copy of the association's constitution or other founding documents, a certified copy of the rules of conduct of the association, an unstated list of the members of the association, an original letter from the association's bankers confirming that the association has a bank account, a copy of the most recent audited annual financial statements of the association, and an original letter from the board or other authorized officials of the association indicating that the association has the capacity to perform the functions set out in section 17 of the Act and to advance the benefits of the Act. In conclusion, Madam Chair, the MRA supports the principle of intention of the law, but it is critical that there are regulations specific to the recycling industry of simultaneously incorporation. The major scrap metal recycling will be prejudiced in normal processing and trading of an important commodity within the South African economy. And furthermore, it would have detrimental consequences within the recycling industry. Honourable members, I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I think that two times before and last quarter again, I just wanted to have an opportunity of going through it. So that it will make our life very easy when we do not get into the same. I think you are not sure that you are trying to do your best and continue. One of the elements of the presentation, I was guided by Health Advocates, Honorable Colabano, Honorable Senyeza, Honorable Matamore, the State of the Honorable Mano.
Thank you. From your end, I'd like to hear very much what your suggestions would be. We have a major problem in this country with your industry in that on the non-ferrous side, the copper cabling is being stolen, it's being bought by members of your industry, it's being exported just from this province alone, millions and millions and millions of rand worth. We have our own ideas about what should be done, but I think it's very interesting to hear what the industry itself would put on the table here as a means to bring an end to that sort of thing. I mean, this is a huge undercover industry that's going on, and it's actually destroying our infrastructure and damaging our telecommunications industry. Just want some input from your end, and also I think an important point has been made that we need to look at the regulations in conjunction with this as soon as possible. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Honourable Chairman. Honourable Chairman. Thanks, Chair. In the presentation from the site, you did mention of saying that in the definition, the text of the group has explained or titled the behavior that is making the smells, the dragging stress, the smashes. And you said the title things doesn't smell. I just want to check whether you want the definition to add the two words or the two definitions of the title.
Honourable Chairman. Thank you, Chair. My own just a simple clarity question. Certain things in the law are not always self-evident. I'm waiting for you to say. If you were a layman like myself, and understand things for small things. You said something that you said that recycling is different from smells and chemicals, so that when you were making again, any certain thing you should do, things like that.
For me, I don't understand how is it divided, or if you explain it, maybe I'll understand.
Thank you very much. When we were doing the introduction, Honourable Member of UK, she is from the second house in the National Council of Provinces. And you know that meeting, when we come to state the NA, even go to the National Council of Provinces for personality. So it's difficult to have a member from that committee so that if there are some issues that they think that we need to deal with those issues while we are speaking, so that we should not have problems with the solution of the second house and the data for the second house. So it's Ms. Nyanga, it's a member of parliament for the second house. I want to give to you to ask questions. I want to wish you to ask.
Recycled copper is a result that in people have been stolen the copper wire to the farmer. How do you say the energy went up? To me, it doesn't save energy, it creates more problems for energy. Like we are having the outage in the farmer, mostly because of stolen copper wire to the farmer. I just want to say that maybe we elaborate on that.
Thank you very much.
I'll
give you for the industry. For a phone, yes, you can get a platform, but not for us because, but if you want to respond to assist with your company, but you don't have a problem about that one, then you can move it yourself then to respond to the question that has been asked by another panel. Thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's not actually a question. I should see we need to select 2 points from yesterday. that in representing what I think most of our membership base, that they also feel it's not necessary to deal with burned cables to remove the sheathing from it, and it's also environmentally uncertain. Addressing the point that I used, that that could be a very effective measure in dealing with the problem, one of them. And just to also highlight that the local non-ferrous manufacturing industry finds it very difficult to find sufficient quantities of scrap. And obviously linked to that is obviously the dubious amount just to support that we have, and the dubious amount of non-ferrous scrap being exported out of South Africa affecting our local manufacturing industry. Thank you.
I'm looking for the solution to some of the documents in Africa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first question regarding suggestions to solve the issue that we've got here. It's a massive problem that we've got, and I'm stating the obvious. And we have got various initiatives. We in the MRA have got various initiatives where we're trying to address these issues. The one issue, the one suggestion that we've got and where we are acting on is we need to train. We need to train the scrap metal dealers. We need to train the South African DD services. We need to train the revenue services, the exports officials, so that they actually know what is legal and what is illegal. We had meetings with the worship, the mayor of Cape Town, who asked a similar question, and one of the suggestions that we have to solve this problem is that we're going to develop a video. Now this video will be made not just for the reporting industry, but for all the parties that I've mentioned, so that we can all be aware of what we're actually dealing with. Will make the dealer, whether it's a bucket shop or whether it's a repartee or whether it's a scrap metal dealer, accountable. Because everything in the video will be specific to the issues that are presenting problems within South Africa. One of the other initiatives that we got, which is currently taking place in Kaohsiung at the moment, is that certain members of the Metal Recycling Association are working in conjunction with Telkom, where Telkom officials are on the premises during the working hours of the members of the Metal Recycling Association. And they're inspecting the material that's coming in. And from this, they're getting the information of where potential material might be stolen and where they're getting it from. So they're getting a lot of intelligence from that point of view. There is cooperation between the major role players and we as an association. I can't urge our members to assist, whether it's the Eskom, whether it's the Telkom, whether it's the Transnet, or Metrorail, it's not going to solve the problem, but it's going to be a way to help with solving the problem. The next point was the addition of smelting and melting under the definition in the recycle. Honourable members, generally a recycler doesn't melt material in a furnace or smelt material. They change the form of it for the requirements of the consumer. Now, with the specific equipment that they've got, they can change the form in any way. They can compact it, put it into a block, or they can put two big choppers and shred it. So melting and smelting is not really specific to a recycler. I hope that will answer the second point as well, whether it's clarifying smelting and melting, the changing form by putting it into a different form of material. The definition of the two types of scrap, the industrial scrap or the new scrap is material which will be collected from major engineering work, and I refer to the automotive industry. Then they manufacture in the car, they'll press out the section of the car, and the part that gets after that pressed out the pressing
would be the threat that we would sort of better communicate. On some occasions, there might be drilled into solid pieces, and those shavings are generated, what we call shavings, that's another form of threat. And that's what we regard as new threat, because it comes from a new piece of some equipment that is making us suspicious, whether it's a motor car, or a fridge, or a shaft, or a mine, that's new threat. The obsolete threat is threat which is its lifespan for the purpose that it was made for, but it comes from them. Could be a fridge which is inefficient in one's home and they started to go and fridge it from the fridge. It could be a motor car. We've seen car bodies lying around all over the show. Here's another one. Can on the side of the road. That's obviously the show. I hope that explains the difference of what I'm talking about. In terms of the energy savings, in principle, legitimately bought scrap that is legitimately melted does have an energy saving. But I take your point that if there's no copper to heat up the furnace to melt it, it does make it a little more expensive. Point taken. In terms of the comment that was just made there, thank goodness regarding the consumers, I don't know where that agenda comes from because I don't think it's got anything to do with safety and security, whether they're getting sufficient material. But I need to put it on record in the state of what's made. One of the greatest things, of the many great things that we have in this country, is that we have free and fair trade. So, as a recycling industry, we have the option to sell our materials to whom we want to. The law of the country allows us food and fair trade. And if the consumer can't meet that price, that's their problem. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm good to send your random information.
My follow-up was that you mean then that the definition in the field is correct as it covers both the definition of the same. In terms of the number of you represent 100 people, 100 companies in the industry. Industry, which according to the state, is almost 4,000 jobs. So, again, that comes back to the whole issue of getting inflation in the state. Sure, now people can register with you and they can register with the association and now can, what is currently a 4% representation can now become 8% or 10% representation. What I'm missing in your presentation, sir, is you are, again, just dealing with those that you feel are legitimately dealing with the problem. You're not getting a sense of what to do in terms of the individual dealing in your own industry. And that I feel is lacking. With all due respect to those being 14 of them, 100 out of 4,000 people.
With respect to the statement that you made, I think this is where the ball's going to go a long way in legitimacy for them. Those people that have chosen not to register their business, to go into them. Now, whether we represent 4% of the industry, fortunately with the bill, it may increase our membership. Where we have we'll be accountable to those members in terms of what I've stipulated as an accredited association. Now, bearing in mind that we may only have 4% of the numbers that are estimated there are in South Africa, but we're doing 80% of the scrap that's generated within South Africa.
That is my next question, is
if there is going to be an increase, it puts the obligation on the association becomes far more bigger. And we've already heard the motor industry complaining that this bill is going to put a huge administrative burden on them. Now, how is your association going to deal with this increase in terms of re-regulating your own industry properly? Because in the end, whatever regulation comes out of here, and I must say, the fact that the regulations that come from this can never be less than the actual bill itself, than the act itself. So I want to know what guarantee do we have that the association would deal currently, and there's questions about whether this whole thing is actually legitimately also dealing with everything. What guarantee do you have that an increase is going to result in a better regulation by yourself?
You may respond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I've stipulated and expanded on the accreditation of a recycling association, we will have a full obligation, and if we want to be accredited, we're going to be answerable to some, whether it's the commissioner or whether it's the minister, in terms of managing the members within our association. We've expanded further than what the Act is proposing. I can't guarantee this. That I cannot do. But that is why we have put into our proposals in the regulation where we can try and enforce with a code of conduct. And many of the members who are out there that are not registered, they will have to be registered now. Because at the moment, we are short on figures that we are estimating. It's difficult to be specific with your question. I understand what you're getting at, but I can't be specific other than with the intentions that you put here that would help managing that problem.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for your
question. Is there any other member of Parliament who would like to take a vote? Help us on our information. We're saying we should be very cautious. That the bill should not be achieved with disadvantages. Is that what they're saying? Well, the second one number is. It's a very different.
I'm sorry,
I'm just asking to find which paragraph the Honourable Member is referring to. I'm sorry, under the introduction of paragraph 2.
Yeah.
The MRA consists of almost 100 members involved in the exact specific paragraph.
The difference is in
the...
Thank you.
left and front door, second hand, left and front door.
Madam Chair, as I'm from the food today, and very intimidated by crossing the axis of mountains, we feel very comfortable in your presence.
That's a
fight. Madam Chair, the Wheels Association of Leaders Living for Leaders. We have approximately 3,000 members, and we have many as much associated with the proper that cooperate with us. The reason for that is it could be problematic to the customer base we find, according to most of the things, we also sell new goods. And a customer will come in and buy himself a high tie, a CD, etc. And then just because he has bought a two or three bag of cash, he has to produce his ID before he can buy it. And we do find that the customer with a bit of research he's done would not find that very acceptable. Then, Madam Chair, I'd like to now carry on with our commentary on the second-hand goods bill, introduction of the STDC, find the second-hand goods bill to be CCAA acceptable from a legislative point of view, and it will contribute to a more regulated second-hand business and form growth in industry. But for unknown reasons, the majority of the business community have never heard of any regulations in the United States, and are ignorant of the existence of previous legislation as well as the intended new legislation. And for that, we have attempted an extra aim to our presentation to give you an idea of the impact. An extra aim takes on some of the operational industries in the formal market and excludes the millions of previously disadvantaged emerging entrepreneurs to make a living directly and indirectly from the second-hand goods trade in our respect. Recent superficial surveys have landed to potential affected parties concerned our state, even senior executives, neighbors, when informed by us of the impact of the new law, admitted that they did not and do not comprehend the massive impact of the second-hand goods law. The total second-hand goods industry in the RSA equals the sale of new goods in the RSA. Any new goods manufactured, imported, and sold in the RSA will become second-hand, and any value locked up in such goods will be exploited for profit. Even for unregistered value, this happens in the RSA and in various positions in every other country in the world. There are approximately estimated 15,000 registered second-hand dealers in the RSA, and an estimated further 50,000 formal, visible, unregistered dealers. Informal dealers are estimated to be in excess of 500,000. Commenting on the context of the second-hand goods bill, Chapter 1, Interpretation and Application of Act, Page 4, Definition of Dealer, to include panel dealers of vehicle body repair shops, as well as engine rebuilders, and the reason but so the vehicles and body parts are channeled through these industries. These industries are the market channels through which chop shop sell these high-tech vehicle parts and space. Form director A and B is acceptable in the bill. C should be added where goods are sold to a dealer by a person and the dealer conceptually binds himself sell the goods back to the same person at a higher price will constitute a form transaction dealer. Second-hand dealers do not have to register as form brokers and use the buyback option to circumvent certain legislation as one example the National Credit Act, which has now been amended to include the buyback system on top of a form broker. Page 5 of the bill. The register or any other register or document required by any other legislation or regulatory body which contains the same information as required by the second-hand goods bill to be sufficient as a register. Reason? Form broking is the most regulated industry in the RSA, yet it is the most informal method of money raising worldwide. Form broking has to comply with second-hand goods bill or the schedule, as they deem as most of all the goods and sums in the schedule indicated in the new law. The National Credit Act, which requires statistical information similar to the second-hand goods law, but in a different format. Without legislation requires records to be kept of all forms of taxes exceeding the $1,000 for that purposes, again in different format. Registers are not accepted. Prima facie evidence in any court of law and cannot be used as evidence to prosecute criminals. Transfer of ownership documents such as form contracts, purchase documents, and time declarations by customers or sellers are the only accepted proof of delivery. registers are only stock records for dealers and lending books for SACs. The bill does not prescribe any documentation other than registers, which could be in the hope that he is led by regulation. Page 5, second-hand goods and or independent agents or intermediaries. These are many slightly damaged or damaged or refurbished goods in the schedules of the bill are sold to jobbers, which are intermediaries between factories, refurbished, etc., and who are contracted to manufacturers and insurance companies who distribute or sell such goods for profit to dealers. We do know that such a lot of stolen goods are also acquired by these jobbers and then distributed to dealers. So that is why we want that to be included. Page 7, section 8.1, 9, D and C, general second-hand dealers and corn brokers deal in all goods indicated in the OES, uninformed SAC officials have refused such applications for classes in the past 2 years, which mentioned strategies with dealers and corn brokers. Yet they have been operating in the industry for longer than 100 years, having made it a decision to stop their family some are forced to trade illegally. Page 7, section 8.5. The law provides for an accredited dealer organization to function as accredited self-regulation bodies reporting to the SAC. The alternative to me is that what would happen if an accredited regulatory body cancels the membership of a dealer with such a body? The dealer must now comply with a new board before he takes any exemption. The concern of the SPDD is that the membership to an accredited organization is valid only for 1 year, and facsimiles or clothing of registration certificates do have it. Unscrupulous delinquent leaders can then enjoy exemptions afforded to leaders for being members of accredited organizations that they are not entitled to. Page 7, section 8.6, the bill does not dictate time frames to the SAC for issuing dealer permits. Dealers have to file leases with landlords and employ staff, invest in shop fittings and equipment stationery, and register with various government regulatory bodies. Such a dealer can, however, not train before he has not secured the premises, and he must add a business address to the state plan of the premises for which he is applying for registration. The registration process does take up to 12 months to be completed. In the past, he says he accepted a valid application as a temporary registration to change. In the big state, in the past 12 months, Jesus has been prosecuted and fined 5,000 rand for not having permits to change. Even after a dealer produced copies of an application form for registration, signed and stamped by the SAC that they had received the application, the court should have held the fine. 6 months later, the dealer still has no registration certificate, is trading illegally, has signed a lease agreement for 5 years, and invested more than $1 million into the business. On page 8, section 8.6, as well as section 15.1b on page 9 of the court states that this dealer will now not qualify for registration, will lose his investment, and because of the non-performance of the SACS. 3 times imposed on the SAC must be imposed on the SACS, and temporary registration mechanisms are required to be incorporated into the new bill. Page 8, section 11.3 and 3C. Section 11.3, the word must be taken that a dealer, the registration must be cancelled to the register is convicted of an offence of dishonesty. This is so why this can include non-industry related convictions such as human mistakes, and it is suggested that subsection 3C be omitted or the wording changed to industry related convictions. Page 9, section 15.1b, the bill states the person is disqualified from being registered. This is interpreted as being final. Together with section 15.1d, it is indicated noted that 50% of all registered dealers will not be registered. Fines of 200 rand are unheard of in the second-hand and fourth industry. Fines of 2,000 rand plus are the norm. Registered legal compliant dealers are prosecuted for minor administrative offences in the past and have received fines of up to 5,000 rand for omitting the time on one purchase document or form contract. On a routine inspection in the town industry state, the registered dealer was recently fined 55,000 rand for omitting the time on 11 documents amongst a total of 7,000 rand as documents over a period of 3 years. According to the bill, this dealer must close down and do his investment, with devastating consequences to his family and his employees. It is suggested that previous convictions under the old Act must not be a criteria for registration under the new legislation. The indicated fine of 200 rand must also be increased to at least 2,000 rand, as 200 rand is not in relation to 3 to 10 years imprisonment terms dictated by the new bill. Chapter 4 dealers, page 11, section 22.4.5, section 22.4.5, it states that the dealer must make a copy of a seller and buyer's ID document or passport and keep it for 5 years. The magnitude of such a volume of paper sales for storage over a period of 5 years is prohibited. The selling production foreseen for the next 5 to 10 years, the making of copies will not be possible at all times. Only 3% of general second-hand dealers and wholesalers utilize computers for running their businesses and for acquiring and disposing of goods. 97% use manual documents and registers as dictated by other legislation. Computers are used mainly to print documents. Many law-abiding entry-level dealers and wholesalers in townships and rural areas have no electricity and access to technology. They will now be criminalized by the new bill for doing what they have been doing for hundreds of years. The SCDD is of the opinion that a dealer or his employees cannot, no matter how sophisticated he is, comply with the section on page 2, section 2319. Compliance can only be assured by completing legal documents with sellers or places, which is not described in the bill, entries and registers on non-legal documents. Chapter 5, motor vehicles, page 12, section 25.1, motor vehicles should include all vehicles such as caravans, trailers, tractors, earth-moving equipment, farm equipment, all vehicles that run on wheels. All these categories are required and sold or placed as dealers and foreclosed on a daily basis. Page 12, section 25.2d. When motor vehicles are bought or sold to other registered is reported. Second-hand vehicles are taken for test drive, which changes the other registered dealers have instructed people in time before the other registered were not the same with purchase or sold. A mechanism must be formulated to allow for changing other registered to protect legal compliant dealers. Page 6, control vehicles. Page 13, section 26.4a. No person may have in his or her possession an apparatus which can be used for recycling for any controlled metal or any article or substance containing any controlled metal unless such a person is registered as a recycler. General second-hand dealers and pawnbrokers acquire grinders, gas cutting equipment, LPG capping gas cylinders like K-Dax, etc., electric stores and even metal mines for retail or as treasures for loan. General second-hand dealers and pawnbrokers do not deal in scrap metal, but acquire and sell all these above-mentioned articles in their thousands per annum. Must they now register over and above as a second-hand dealer, a pawnbroker and a recycler and comply with the regulations specific to the recycler? This section must be changed to be more specific without affecting the intentions of the law. Deviation is the cessation of respect to two core legal compliance registered general users to be prosecuted maliciously by untrained grassroots SAP members. Chapter 8 rounds of the police official, page 40, section 39, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Police officials who have no or limited knowledge of the Second Amendment situation as well as widely different interpretations of the law, having a part exposed either to abuse and malicious prosecution. Such cases are rejected in court and of law, but cost dealers legal fees of thousands of rand. A dealer was recently prosecuted for using an abbreviation for diamond ring, example dealing. The dealer was found not guilty, but his legal costs were 13,000 rand. It is suggested that the law must indicate or expect that the police officials intend to deal and deal with dealers on designated trained personnel. A clear distinction must be drawn between police officials and a designated police official in the law. Page 15, section 32, the legal advisors of the SCDD advise that the work on reasonable grounds in terms of this law be more specifically defined. Page 15, section 35, 9b, again, the word "there are reasonable grounds" must be more specifically defined. This could allow any police official unlimited powers to search and seize property of a dealer. This could and would be most probably to claim for damages against the commissioner of police. Chapter 9, General Provisions, page 16, 39.1. Designated police officials at the local level must be delegated the task of approving applications for registration and renewal. They are the officials that interact with dealers in all the second-hand industries at grassroots level. Chapter 10 of Seasonal Provision, page 80, section 43, 10, A, B, C, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Current legislation applicable to general second-hand dealers and home brokers is state that only certain goods are classified as controlled goods, with a majority of goods that are registered and information where and from whom it was acquired is unknown and was not reported. It would thus be futile as well as impossible to try and report the required information from seasonal registers. The new bill does not extend time frames for the promulgation of or implementation of regulations. The regulations cannot cancel the constitutional clause, and the SCDG and its legal advisors are the opinion that it will create chaos in all certain entities and render legal compliant users illegal. Chapter 10 dealing with the constitutional provision must be amended to at least indicate time frames whereby regulations will be punished before the new bill becomes completely effective. An example is the National Credit Act, which only came into effect after all regulations were completed to ensure the smooth preparation and short period period. All computer programs must be redesigned as well as all documentation and certain matters to comply. Depending on the dictates of the regulations, there will be overlapping conflicts of compliance amongst the different categories of second-hand industry, as well as many other legislations. Schedule 1, goods, page 19, household and office equipment. It is suggested that shop-fitting equipment must be added. Shop-fitting is a separate industry from office equipment and includes racking, counters, scaffolding, etc., and is one of the largest second-hand industries that are retained in the second-hand market. Summary, the SCDD is committed to assist the FATF in combating crime, to assist in regulating all second-hand industries wherever we are required to do so, to promote ethical standards in all second-hand industries. The SCDD is since its inception in 1987, is the only organization that has done intensive studies all second-hand industries. We advise the SAPS, National Credit Regulator, members and dealers in all second-hand industries, as well as legal practitioners, prosecutors, auditors. We also diffuse much consultation between dealers of all second-hand industries and regulatory bodies of the state. we supply a basic format of legal compliant documents and registered to all certain entities using the line. Geostron and also serve and supply safety to the second-hand trade including corporate. The SCDD is our ever concerned that the new second-hand group bill does not impose instructions on the SACS to investigate reported non-registered, non-compliant second-hand dealers. Yet, non-registered dealers outnumber registered dealers 4-1. It is suggested that the SACS be instructed by legislators to prosecute reported unregistered non-compliant dealers. In the past, long lists of unregistered dealers have been compiled in most towns and cities in the RSA reported to the SACS with no effect. Illegal dealers are never inspected, and in some cases they are located adjacent to registered dealers. Much so that they are channeled to these unregistered and truly dealers. Should this reluctance of the SACS to prosecute the address, crime prevention will be given a huge positive injection and facilitate mass registration of second-hand dealers. This will eliminate terminal instruments to a dollar 50 cents. The other main concern is that the new bill makes no provision for previously disadvantaged residents and engineers to participate in any emerging economy such as the RSA. Due to all the technical complexities and regulatory compliance requirements, the bill will criminalize many masses who already operate in all second-hand industries, many doing what they have been doing and have been taught by the ancient systems ancient times. It is the opinion of the ECDD that these micro-entry-level dealers will go further underground, which will create windows of opportunity for criminal elements to be and regulate. I detect my employees of regulatory dealers will also increase and add to the new crime phenomenon in the RSA. Madam Chair, I thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. And yes, I can show you a little attention to that presentation. I was just asking the reward about everybody to say something to the one that I have. And it's a pity that you will see this also very good. So to be honest, that the Lord of Allegations is very much the body. The whole concern is questioning the capacity of the police, corruption in the police, inefficiency of the police, everything that is negative in the police. This is the same with the news. And I'm saying that it's a pity that we all need the city now, that there is a lot that has to say here. That I don't think very comfortable about. There is nothing for us. Because I'm asking myself, if it is not there this time for the gathering, this kind of information, how do we have this kind of information? How really it's connecting the police. If you hear it, you can come to a conclusion that there's no police in front of you. It's not interesting. The people that are going to change it now, that's why I'm asking whether it's for hearing the same thing as the one that I'm hearing now. But I want us to concentrate on that. I want us to concentrate on the presentation. And that was my own observation, and I think we have to, as a major change, we as the ANC will deal with this at any time in the portfolio, so that we should deal with some of this. This is information that is not exposed to. To ask the members of parliament, but it's not a computer, but I'm trying to suggest this about the police when it comes to the thing that we saw. There are some instances where it is said that police are part of the problem. They are part of the criminals, they are part of the system, they will make the thing. And there are some sort of examples that have been said, but when we have problems, the problem is that it's not the CTA, but the main thing that I'm trying to make sure was to. And we're not going to entertain that now. I just want to say that I am aware of the things that do exist here. And I don't know how to attend to them. It comes to good to call them to parliament. There are some of them who feel that I think that they need to attend to the minister in that community. Because we can't sit here and tell the people that policing in this country, whereas we don't have a community. So I think we need to attend to them. But now, I want us to focus.
Thank you,
some of the issues that you just raised are issues that the committee in its deliberations which is the parties who are already identified as well. You know, for instance, that there is a specifically to even the cops who just demonstrate, etc. They're also pointing to the fact that there are no cops to the walls of the state, because if you are going to specific trainings, the number of people across the state as well, if you don't have the register, they should be done as well. So some of it we have identified ourselves, so I don't want to go into those My first question is on page 2 at the bottom, section 8.5, your comment there. What do you suggest? What is the alternative? I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, that might happen, but what is the alternative? What are you suggesting should be done? Second question that I may have, second question is now, I think the third presenter who's got an issue with the third procedure within the law. And quite frankly, I don't understand why. Because it clearly says that it must be after they've obtained a warrant. And now a warrant is only given to the police by the magistrate. And by the time it's given to the police by the magistrate, they have already made a proof that they have a reasonable that's a reason to believe that something is wrong. So, you know, I fail to understand this whole issue about why the industry is so worried about the certain procedure obligations of the police. Quite frankly, I think it's something that helps in the law. Yes, but in the law, and it clearly says, I think it's 31 that says, it must be after that of state warrant through the court. This is the last issue that you set on it, and I don't want to further deal with the issue, but I think it's a valid point that maybe we should be in the law also. And we talked about this last week as well, the obligations of the patient certificate. The law is one of the certificates. And I think one thing that is important is that we also look at the obligation of the police to deal with unregistered dealers. For the simple reason is we tend to say, and we are very effective with the police, I know that. We tend to say that the police know that they're going to do that, but it doesn't always happen. So maybe it takes to the police in the role, and I think that's a valuable service that we can take on board as well. But I think a broader issue almost, the issue that we just raised into the party, the powers and obligations of that, because of that, I don't see this myself clearly. And I think we need to be really far more clearly in terms of what is the power, what are the obligations. We cannot have a situation where only the legalized and the registered side are the ones that are being infected and investigated by that. So surely we want to make sure that we get rid of the unregistered ones.
Honorable
Adam
I think the issue of the powers of police to search must be looked at in the context of the problem that there is in the country. That is a government, is a problem. So when one looks at these powers in the context of the problem and trying to solve, one needs to understand that there has to be some power to search whenever there is a suspicion. Now, I just wanted to get confirmation about the figures in page 1 that there are only 15 registered secondhand dealers and 30,000 are registered. The majority of dealers are unregistered. That's confirmation. And the informal dealers that are estimated to exceed 500,000. Are these informal dealers registered themselves or unregistered? Now, if they are registered in more than 500,000 dealers are unregistered in the country, which obviously is special attention in the situation. And now, my second question comes from page 4, where you speak about dealers that have been prosecuted for cars that have a different political reasons because of the health drive that are taking place. And you suggest that a mechanism must be formulated to allow for changes in political reasons. Now, do you have specific suggestions of what needs to be done? Because you are talking about the mechanism that must be formulated. But do you have anything specific to suggest that we should have?
Honorable
Martin?
In the last paragraph of this, IT fell by the way. I just want to get clarity on how IT are in the perspective of the system. Whose IT should be sold in the stock in the paragraph of that channel of the system.
Madam Chair, first question, the document, about the document, the big thing is to record anything in the register is a very accessible way of keeping a proper date, time, etc. record of your purchases and deliveries or sold goods. The big problem is that if you write anything in a register, it's futile to think that a criminal can be prosecuted by writing something in a register. You need documents whereby the customer described or the seller that sells goods to you has declared that he is the legal owner of such goods, he's got the right to sell it, and he understands that if he lies about it, he can be prosecuted. By doing so, they can prove in court, and according to all the legal things that go with that, they can prove that ownership changed to that guy, or to the person who bought the stuff or sold the stuff. Any goods, anything that's written in the language that is not a legal document. So we suggest that the format of a minimum description of the type of document and the content of such a document for each entry into that register also be described in the law, so that the person buying the goods can give a proper description from who and when. And there will be a legal compliant document that proves that the ownership transfer. So many times we've seen it happen where only a registry is kept. A criminal must be prosecuted. And then they stand up in court and the wise attorneys and these guys use the all the different types of legislation to get criminals free. Why? Because the register means nothing. Only a written document that was signed by the seller is taken to be accepted in court for prosecution, and that definitely we need it must be incorporated into the book. We have no problem with the certain seizure. The only thing is, again, why we mentioned that we like the certain seizure, we are happy about the certain seizure. It is actually not even strict enough according to the STBD. The problem that this could be is we do have those SAT members that have got things against certain dealers, and then on the idea that it is perhaps defeating the process of the legal story, they could go and seize goods without a order, according to the law. That's how we interpret it. We interpret it wrongly, sorry. Right. The quantity of dealers, 15,000, but there has been no official statistical surveys done. These are estimations of picking up the different quantities from different police stations of Article 4 permit holders, etc., etc., and then us combining these things. We are 15,000 registered, and then the unregistered dealers is what has been reported to us by our members in all areas, from KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape, Free State, Northwest, Mpumalanga, etc. Of dealer lists that they have identified in those areas that are openly, visibly trading name pawn shop, name second-hand dealer, name swap shop, not registered with the SAC. Not registered with the NCR, not registered with any of these bodies. And these are the guys that we are worried about, and they create problems for us as registered dealers because the police think that we are doing what those guys are doing, and we want them to be able to be pulled into the framework, and if they reluctantly come in, to take a whip and whip them into the framework. And that's the way we feel it must be done. Right, dealers, other meter readings suggest, well, the 500 unregistered dealers, I'm sorry, 500,000. Madam Chair, with your permission, you wouldn't believe that just about every second spaza shop in our in South Africa also receives goods as paid. We can take you now to around this area here. And I will show you that at every spot and at every corner center, and just about every second pharmacy, I will be able to pledge my DVD, I will be able to pledge my watch, I will be able to pledge whatever, for medicine, for food, etc. And that guy will accept that. And he will again keep that, and if you don't come and take the shop, he will tell it to the second-hand dealer to recover his money. That, in essence, might be a pawnbroker and makes him a dealer in second-hand goods. And that is how we are referring to it. We have second-hand dealers operating on subsistence farming areas in the south side, which has been doing pawnbroking for years. They, subsistence farmers, for instance, in the Transvaal tribe, haven't got access to formal banking or even cash loans. They say, they can't conform to FICA and all this sort of nonsense. So what they do is, they go and they pawn their sheep to be able to pay for medical fees. They go and they pawn one chapel to send their children to school. They go and pay their interest with chicken. This is what we say informal and in an emerging economy. We train and assist those people and those guys in coming into the formal regulatory market. But it's difficult, and a lot of them are going further underground because of the complexities of being regulated and being exposed to these kinds of regulations. And it's sad that we can't get some other exemption for people like that to be able to first go into stages of regulation and then into formal high-tech regulation as what this policy says. Some of these people can't even read or write, but they are excellent dealers. They are excellent dealers. You can tell me nothing about the value of a sheep or a cattle or whatever the case may be. But they can't interpret even a contract. And we feel that these people must definitely be assisted and not be criminalized by the law. The odometers of vehicles, a simple thing like, for instance, if the odometer is saying that the logbook must be checked and it must be accepted by the law, because what happens now is a police official will come to a dealer, he's cooking the vehicle at, let's say, 5,000 kilometers. Now it's standing at 5,700 kilometers. and it was tested or used to go and demonstrate in the bowl or whatever the case may be, and now he gets administered to be prosecuted before these are odometers being used wrong. And they say the information was false and gets prosecuted for supplying false information according to that. So these are the small little things that cause the hassle, and then in the end, causes dealers not to want to cooperate with the SAP, which we want to constantly impress on the dealers to cooperate with the SAP. I said, what happens is, if you have these huge piles of people's IDs, these IDs are now being sold by your employees to syndicates. This has happened already to us, to some of our members. These IDs are used to buy goods and to at furniture shops, etc., under false pretenses. I think you caught me on TV. Now a guy ranks up all of a sudden and he gets a court order against him for buying a round sheet which he never bought. And then his ID was used to buy that sort of thing. So what does happen is that when you've got such huge pieces or copies of ID theft is becoming a new phenomenon in South Africa, and criminals do utilize that to perpetrate a bad situation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, if you want to find yourself a name. I give for more to get the name and I give you
the name. Yes, it's short. Just one
question.
How about this ID? Are you saying you collect these IDs and keep them in the store? Because that would be better. I thought you were there from office. I dream of office or real ID. I think about the copies, not the ID book of them.
Okay.
I think one thing that we might see as well is that while we say that there are certain things that make sense in terms of the obligations of trust, etc., etc., there's another issue that we might be facing, and that is the obligation of the industry. And I must be honest that some of the comments that you make, I think, as you said, doesn't indicate needs a bit more serious interrogation. But there are some of these things that we are not involved in. And one of them is, for instance, you would say that it would be impossible, no matter how skilled they are, for a dealer to implement Section 23 on AB and C. It's going to be Monday, so I suggest you get technical training. The fact of the matter is, it's not impossible. It's not impossible. It is, if somebody comes and you can see a serial number and you obviously you know something is wrong. Simple as that. They are obviously, no one is expecting you to take over your work and do it on their bill, but it seems that you've got an obligation as a citizen of this country and as a dealer in this to do one agency. And I think we must stress this to all the industries we have here today, that with every privilege that we have, with every freedom that we have, with every freedom to trade in whatever we want to do, whatever we want to sell, whatever we are doing, or whatever the case may be, comes an obligation as well. And I think the industry must face this fact and realize that you have an obligation as well. It's going to take both yourself and stuff to make this a success. But there's no way that you're going to back down in the future.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lega. I think that was good. That was good. Thank you very much to Mr. Lega. And thank you very much to Mr. Lega. And thank you to all the members. We've come to the end of the meeting.
Sorry, can you hear me without changing off the remark? With regards to the issue on the work with the seizure, we don't have
we then have a problem where this magician of war is not in fact from the area of concern is a certain spot where it says opponents to the official name without the word enter for the country. That's not the problem. Yeah, but it's there's reasonable grounds that a warrant would be issued. It's a very subjective thing that he said is that these persons say, well, I think there's reasonable grounds for investigating or what the premise is. That's the area that we would be more concerned with in terms of what are the specific criteria that should be applied in considering such a situation. Madam Chair, just in also on the regulation, we have not heard of with the recording of all this coming to be quite honest, we were the to report for all this to be written in the administration to be reported. We only refer to the transitional register, because the old law indicated certain goods to be regulated and had to be written into registers and numbers. Certain goods which is now in the new legislation is not anything regulated. Now, to record into the goods that were never numbered, and if we have no information from where they came, a pretty good that over the past 2 years, things like watches, files, drawbacks, etc., into transitional registers, would be difficult because we haven't got records of being imported because it was never required by law to do so. But from a certain date that the legislation comes in, we are quite happy to do anything that the body says. And we feel there is even not enough done by the law to make that here. But in the transitional register, the old goods could cause us a problem to be able to record and to give all the information. That's the only thing. Just the transitional report. That and then anything that is modified and the stuff that is to be reported to the interest people say in the paper, we stand on record to say that the second hand user control board and the amendment so offer that very close to the interest people doing so and so.
Yes,
thank
you.
That honourable member of the Portfolio Committee has actually, if he was right in his statement about the obligations from the dealers, what we experience, the problem is if you look at that specific regulation, we actually criminalise the fact that we don't report. Our problem is when you do report it to state in most of the cases, is your obligation to report is 100% correct, but when you get this expected type of stolen, this is in the thing that's working impractical. The guys or the seller or the phone is standing in front of you. How can you, sometimes you're selling the food in the view, but it's fake that they make an intention to incur the food. That's not where it ends. It's all about the action time of the set. Because what happens is now is I need to actually to say if it was possible, I should have detain that guy. But you can't keep that guy remaining there waiting for that to react. And most of the times when it happens, that pilot arrives too late. Because some of our residents in crime prevention projects is that you do the whole process with that type of guy. What our members are good to, they fill in the purchase document, the guy making a declaration, making time to get some proof of this guy's intention to sell this stuff. But our problem is now you criminalize the guys who are waiting for that. They either don't arrive, or that we must release that guy knowing if he moves out, because we're not going to take that stuff. And that's our problem, just to make sure that when we call that, it must be regarded within, say, lateral instructions from the National Commission, that's a prioritized type of thing. They can't tell us that I haven't got a vehicle because I can't maintain keeping that guy there. That's the only problem. That's actually what we meant by that from the obligation. We very much obliged because the problem arises to keep that guy in check and to get enough evidence for his intentions to try to sell the property to you. And the response time, that's our problem.
Thank you very much. If you're lucky enough, you might have a chance to get lucky.
Thank you very much for your presentation. We've come to the end of this meeting. Everyone is invited to lunch. Please do come to lunch, because otherwise it will be a waste of your time. Your time, because we ordered lunch for everyone. That we are supposed to be for everyone. And it was some of the issues that I'm going to be doing. So we need to stay to this lunch presentation. So most of the time, these are the last presentations.
Thank you.